Previously on Serial.
He left his cell phone in the car with me. Told me he'd call me.
Okay, now at this point, you know why he's leaving the car with you.
Yes.
And why is that?
Because he said he was going to kill Hay.
I definitely understand that someone could look at this and say, oh man, you know, he must be lying.
And so begins the final episode of the podcast sensation Serial. And if you're listening, like millions of Americans, you're on the edge of your seats today asking that one question: how is this thing going to end?
So you don't really have, if you don't mind me asking, you don't really have no ending? Like, it's just...
I mean, do I have an ending?
Well, in case you haven't heard the series, it focuses on the 1999 trial of Adnan Syed, who was convicted of murdering his ex-girlfriend, Haemin Lee, at the age of 17 in Baltimore. For those of you who are fans, if you haven't had a chance to listen to the last episode yet, don't worry. I'm a fan, too. We're not dealing with any spoilers here. I haven't heard the last episode yet either because I'm here working. I'll listen to it after work today. But hosted by Sarah Koenig, Serial has captivated millions of listeners over this 12-week run, but it's also exposed a number of problems in the American justice system. Joining us now is Maurice Chamma, staff writer for The Marshall Project. Hi, Maurice.
Hi.
I want to start with the police investigation. Some of the things that were revealed in Serial are absolutely astounding, you know, to naive listeners like me. You know, police investigation that focused only on a couple of cell phone calls out of, you know, 15 or 20, or didn't talk to Adnan Syed's main alibi. But listen to one of the experts that Sarah Koenig interviewed about the police investigation.
I would say that this is better than average.
But
what I'm saying is this: the mechanics, the documentation, the steps that they took and all of that, they look good. Okay? I would have probably followed the same route.
That's Jim Tranum, one of the investigators, a former D.C. homicide detective who was a character in the story, who told Sarah Koenig this investigation was better than most, Maurice Chamma. I find that astounding.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's often easy to kind of look back at a case 15 years later and imagine what we would have done as police investigators and really wonder whether they took the best route. And in some ways, that kind of shows how far we've come. You know, this is a case that it's easy to kind of judge by the standards of 2014 what happened in 1999. And when you talk about, you know, them not testing the DNA right away and focusing on one subject, I mean, we still hear about crime labs being backed up. We still hear about police departments that are understaffed, that are under-resourced, and that are kind of overwhelmed with cases like this. And so it's easy to imagine that once they find a suspect who they think is likely, they focus in and try to find other evidence that confirms that it was that person. I mean, you know, it's really they need enough information to convince a prosecutor that this guy did it, and then the prosecutor needs enough evidence with the police's help to convince a jury. And that's, you know, a certain amount of evidence, but it's not necessarily a kind of ironclad, foolproof set of data that when we kind of look back at it later, we can say is necessarily fully convincing.
I mean, one of the bombshells for me in listening to the show, you know, apart from the details of the case, which some of them are amazing, is the idea that a police investigation and a prosecution, it was said in the show, isn't about finding the truth. It's about confirming a theory.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think that the police and the prosecutors at the time did believe that Adnan did it. And one thing that comes up a lot in recent years when legislatures around the country try to address the issue of wrongful convictions is they talk a lot about something called prosecutorial tunnel vision or police tunnel vision, this idea that once they have an idea of who did it, they focus all their resources on that person because they have to be efficient. You know, they can't go down chasing a million different leads if those leads have very little to back them up. In this case, you know, a lot of listeners, I think, are probably convinced that Adnan did it. And it goes to show that it's sort of easy to see how the police would have believed that, even if, you know, there's also lots of evidence that he didn't.
Maurice Chamma, one of the other themes of sort of the look at the criminal justice system here is how the prosecution used Adnan's culture, his Pakistani-American culture and his Muslim culture, sort of against him. They paint a picture of a boy who was going against his culture in such a way when he was jilted by his girlfriend. He had laid everything on the line by dating a girl he wasn't supposed to date, and he was so destroyed by this situation that he killed her. Is that a common strategy? Does it represent, you know, fairness, fair game in a prosecution, or does it represent a problem of, you know, cultural caricatures and stereotypes? Or is it just, you know, fair game? They were convinced.
Well, I mean, I certainly don't think anyone would say that it's totally fair game to try to sway a jury based on their sort of biased ideas of a certain culture. But I also think that it's very hard, again, because this is such a human system, to even if the prosecution and the defense doesn't mean to imply anything about the character of the defendant. In Adnan's case, what has struck me is less his Muslim or Pakistani background, but more that he was so young. You know, I think we often, when we listen to this show, think that, well, how could you, you know, imagine that someone that young, you know, would look so evil to the jury? But this was a time when there were a lot of kind of circulating ideas in the media about young, dangerous, often black or brown criminals who were raping and murdering and stealing. And a lot of states around the country passed really harsh laws that increased the penalties and lowered the ages at what point you're sort of considered an adult. So the fact that Adnan didn't go to a juvenile court and was treated as an adult sort of from the beginning here is really a product of that kind of mid-90s fear. It came up in a lot of election campaigns that is not as familiar today to a lot of us.
I was just struck before we let you go, Marie Shema, in the end, that there was a murder conviction, a life conviction, based on, you know, the testimony of one other person, a real he said scenario, and that was pretty much the sum total of the case.
Yeah, I mean, over at the Marshall Project, we have a piece up by one of our researchers, Eli Hager, that's about, you know, what different defense and prosecutors that we called up thought of the case. And reading that, it's really interesting how different individuals kind of pick these different little pieces of evidence as the silver bullet for them. That proves, you know, either that he's guilty or that he's not guilty, or, and this is very common, that either way there wasn't really enough information to convince them now that he should have been convicted. And I think it's really easy to kind of get caught up in these details, but at the end of the day, because we won't know everything, we sort of have to look at the big picture and you know, do like prosecutors and jurors did and go with their gut.
The final episode of Serial is up. It's on your phone. I got to go listen. I'm going to close out the show. Marie Shema, staff writer for the Marshall Project. Thank you.
Thank you.